Hi, we're Grace and Clara, here to shake up the world of women's health.
We know firsthand how intimidating it can be to speak up when it comes to issues like your menstrual cycle or menopause.
That's why we create Unprocessed, a weekly podcast where we dive into every aspect of women's health, from mental well-being to physical nutrition.
We're here to ask the burning questions and encourage us all to advocate for ourselves.
So get ready for some smart, cheeky and witty discussions about all things women's health. Hey guys, welcome back to season 3 of Unprocessed. If you're new to this podcast, my name is Grace and I'm so excited to jump back on the mic to bring you a new season of beautiful conversations. In this season, our goal is to spotlight remarkable women who have embarked on a transformative health journey, sharing their wisdom on navigating life's highs and lows. Today I'm joined by Denny Rollins, Head of Prevention at the Butterfly Foundation, Australia's leading charity dedicated to supporting those affected by eating disorders and body image concerns, along with their loved ones. In this episode, Denny courageously shares her personal journey with an eating disorder, offering invaluable insight into overcoming adversity. We delve into the complex dynamics between social media and body image and explore strategies to cultivate self-compassion and body kindness. I will pop a trigger warning in this episode as we do discuss some heavy topics. And if you or someone you know needs support, please contact Butterfly Foundation on 1-800-334-673. I'll also pop a link to their website in the show notes below. Denny, thank you so much for joining us on Unprocessed today. I am so excited to have this chat with you. And I just wanted to kick our conversation off. Could you share with our listeners a little bit about how you became the head of prevention for the Butterfly Foundation and what inspired you to pursue this career around prevention education relating to body image?
I've been at Butterfly for 17 years, so very much working in the prevention and early intervention community education space in that time. I guess my biggest driver and motivator for getting involved with a Butterfly was that I had a lived experience of an eating disorder. I was diagnosed at 21. I'd been involved in really high level sport. My sport was netball. And unfortunately, obviously things that happened during my adolescent years and maybe formative years, resulted in an eating disorder, which took me off the court at that time. So I worked in the health and fitness industry for many years and did a lot of peer mentoring and different things just after I had fortunately kind of recovered and got to a better place, got back on the netball court as well. But I always felt that there was a space for me in the eating disorder sector. And it's obviously not for everybody post their own experiences, but for me, I was really passionate about that prevention space and thinking about young people, children and adolescents, and I guess thinking about the things that would have really helped me and protected me more from developing an eating disorder at the age of 21. So that passion and dedication is what drives my work. It's been such an honour to be able to build the prevention services at Butterfly, which I've done over the last 17 years. We've got an amazing team, wonderful presenters out there. For me, it very much comes from my own lived experience, but also that desire to really support others to thrive and have a positive relationship with their body.
I just want to touch on something you mentioned there. So you've started working in the health and nutrition space. Was that hard? You were very young and just learning about your body and then going into a space where can be a lot of mixed messages and pressure. How did you feel?
That's a really good question. And I think one of the things that obviously a lot of people who experience an eating disorder often find themselves back in either the space to help others. So it might be psychology, it might be nutrition, because as a result of their own experience, they have this increased appreciation, but also how they could help other people, obviously in the positive. For myself, having a sport background and also through my own experience, I had a really serious exercise issue and that was obviously very problematic and challenging. So when I did recover, I knew I wanted to get back in and support people to have a positive relationship with their body. And I obviously re-engaged, as everybody should, find positive ways to move and exercise. But I did want to work in the fitness industry because I just felt there was such poor messaging out there around what exercise was all about. It was, we move for our shape, we move for our weight. That's compensatory. So what we eat, we burn. So that kind of mentality, which obviously I had really internalized strongly during my eating disorder experience, I wanted to offer a different voice in the fitness industry. I did wait a number of years to ensure that it was the right time to do that, because obviously sometimes eating disorders can trick people into thinking that something might be a really good space for them, but actually it not be. So I had an outdoor fitness business. I was very, you know, very careful in not doing anything around measuring and weight. And, you know, I did decline clients who really wanted weight loss as their number one focus. So making sure that my values and my recovery was maintained and supported and strengthened during that experience, which I definitely feel that it did. It was a time before social media. I'm not entirely sure I could do that now, just knowing how you need to promote fitness businesses and whatnot. I feel it would be, I would find that challenging now. But yeah, so for me, it became an opportunity for me to challenge further my thoughts and my attitudes and my relationship with exercise and my body, and also continually have those check-ins. So I do feel I was involved in the fitness industry for about 7 years. I also taught personal trainers how to be personal trainers. So training and development is my background also. Yeah, and I just felt that I was able to add a different voice into the fitness industry. But I think the health, well-being, eating disorder sector and the prevention space is definitely better aligned with me rather than, I guess, the fitness industry right now.
It's so interesting you touched on social media there. I spoke to a body positivity coach late last year, and I said to her, I'm the biggest I've ever been, and my insecurities about my body are so heightened, and it's embarrassing for me to admit that at 30. And she said, well, what are you scrolling on? Like, what are you seeing daily? And I'm like, I'm seeing influencers in beautiful bikinis, they're beautiful bodies, and it's making me feel like I can't go to the beach if that's what they look like. And she said, mold your social media around people who look like you, who align with your values, and who are about your mission. And ever since you said that, yep, it's really helped with social media, because social media, it's a beautiful thing, but it's also a force to be reckoned with.
It absolutely is. Social media is here to stay, but we need to be so careful about the content that we consume, and particularly when it's appearance-based content. We also have to be really careful that we apply the lens that we don't know what we're looking at, really. We don't know if it's misinformation. We don't know really what that person is doing or isn't doing. We don't know how much digital editing has been happening. We don't know whether it's AI. There's just so many questions that we need to ask when we're looking at social media. But the biggest thing it does is it drives comparisons. And unfortunately, those comparisons are not in the positive. So, you know, if you're not feeling great in yourself, it's not about just saying to someone, snap out of this, but that's a tool that you can use to actually curate your feed in a way that is less about bodies and more about function, or more about your hobbies or your interests or things that set you alive inside, that's got nothing to do with how you look. And the more content we can consume that does that, then the better experience we'll have online.
Absolutely. There's no way that we can avoid it, but we can curate it. Hey guys, it's Grace here. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. I want to interrupt our chat and share something really exciting with you all. We've taken your feedback into consideration over the last 12 months and used it to build a new app with one goal in mind: to help you feel good. We're proud to say that our app extends beyond delicious recipes and will be supporting you 24/7 to help nourish your mind and body. In this app, you'll have access to our complete recipe library with over 2,500 recipes, experts to help you improve your sleep, sustainable tutorials to keep your produce fresher for longer, and movement classes that will make you feel so good. We have popped a special offer in the show notes below. Now let's get back into the episode. Could you please share an overview about what the Butterfly Foundation does?
Butterfly was founded in 2002. So from a charity or a not-for-profit perspective, we're relatively young, but we work to support all Australians affected by eating disorders and body image concerns. So we do that in a number of ways. We run the national helpline for eating disorders and body image concerns. We have some treatment and recovery programs at the moment that we're offering in the community. We also do a lot of advocacy work, so speaking and advocating on behalf of those with lived experience, just to the topic of social media, we are working with social media platforms to try to safeguard and improve those environments when it comes to eating disorders and body image. And we also have our prevention and education services, which is the area that I've been working in. So we offer programs and resources and webinars and workshops that work in schools, families, homes, workplaces, and also sporting organisations.
Do you find working with these programs within schools is the key point to help with prevention, or should we be talking to our kids sooner?
The thing with body image is that as soon as somebody is born, they are going to start to be influenced by lots of different things when it comes to their body image. So the education and resources in schools are absolutely a critical part of it. We need to be giving information, resources, strategies. Is that going to fix the problem? The answer is no, because what we need to see is the environments in which people are growing and developing, particularly young people, that they are positive and that they are accepting and supportive of all bodies, of all sizes, of all genders. So that is a critical part. But as I said, the actual whole school environment is an important one. A home environment is another. The sporting environments or dance environments or other activities that young people participate in, those environments, they're all really critical that we make them safe places for bodies to thrive. And then, of course, we've got the other layer, which is society and the systems. So, you know, we can do all the work we can with individuals and we can do all the work with families, but as soon as someone goes online, they're then influenced by a whole other range of things that can affect the way they feel about their body. So it's really important that we don't just see it as a single thing or there's a one solution. We have to all work together to be able to address this, and we have to keep moving. So we have to keep learning and unlearning. 17 years at Butterfly, I can honestly say the way I used to speak about this is very different now as a result of having learned, having more research, access to lived experience, stories and other, you know, other experiences that people have shared that allow us to keep moving and progressing this issue because it keeps changing.
That's so interesting you mentioned unlearning. I feel like as an adult, I'm definitely unlearning things from my teen years. Like in my head for years, I was like, I need to be this size. I worked in the fashion industry, so I was a sample size for the fittings. And as I was putting on more weight and the clothes weren't fitting, oh, what a trigger that was when people were like pinning their garments on me and it was too tight. I had to unlearn that that's an industry and they are making clothes and they will grade them and I will fit the graded size. But I had to unlearn what a healthy size was, and health is about what we feel rather than how we look.
That's right. And health is going to look different on every person. There isn't a one size fits all when it comes to, well, there's sample sizes, sure, which obviously is incredibly problematic because it doesn't represent what exists out, you know, in the real world. But the reality is that our health, the health of an individual is influenced by so many different things. Body size is influenced by so many things. And sadly, so many people are doing really hard and dangerous things in order to conform to a body size or to conform to a clothing size. And the reality is our clothing needs to fit our body. Our body doesn't need to fit the clothing. So, and, you know, we don't also allow people's bodies to change and evolve over time. If you look at photographs of yourself as a baby to now, your body is different. You've changed. You look from a toddler and as we move through, but society doesn't allow us to move or change. And I think that's a real danger and a really dangerous message we're sending out there is that, you know, we have to still be looking young. We still have to be having our, you know, our body needs to look a certain way. And of course, we want to encourage health promoting behaviors. So it's really important that we don't consider positive body image movements or that it's saying don't take care of yourself and your health. But what it is saying is that it's really complex and there's lots of reasons why people can and can't do certain things, and there are lots of reasons why people's bodies look the way that they do.
And another thing that I had to unlearn, oh, this is so problematic, but growing up I would have people in my life, so it's like, oh, you look really skinny, and then if you weren't looking skinny they would say, oh, you're looking really healthy. So in my head I associated the word health with larger, which is so problematic.
Yeah. And I think one of the challenges in our society is that appearance talk and that body talk is rife. And it's from, we start hearing it from when we're little, when we, the compliments that we receive are so often about our appearance. It's confusing. You know, you might even just get your hair cut and someone goes, oh my gosh, your hair looks amazing. And it's like, okay, well, did it not look amazing? You know, we don't second guess and we distrust, I think, compliments and comments. And they are problematic because every time we hear a comment or a compliment based on how our body looks, we're reaffirming appearance and body ideals. And we are saying that, okay, well, you know, have you lost weight? You look great. Well, that's reaffirming that, that being a low weight or losing weight is the goal or something that we all should be absolutely celebrating instead of actually celebrating perhaps other things that, oh, that's wonderful that you've, you know, you've found water aerobics is a thing that you love, or wow, that's fantastic that you've, you know, you're trying a different type of yoga that you're enjoying, or wonderful, you've started, you know, doing fun runs. So whatever it might be, we're instead of celebrating, you know, the things that people are adding into their lives, we're always focusing on, I guess, the body size, how it looks. And so it just drives that constant worry that am I looking the right way according to society, according to my friends, according to my family, and that we're being judged. And that isn't a fun experience to have. So you're not alone in trying to unlearn that kind of association with words to how it makes you feel.
Can we dive into what is Body Kind and why the Butterfly Effect has chosen this message?
Yeah, so Butterfly Foundation founded the kind of term Body Kind. We obviously, in our prevention work, our message is supporting people to have a positive relationship with their body, with eating and physical activity. We know that there are heaps of different movements and really wonderful movements out there that are promoting positive body image. So it's, you know, body positivity, there's body neutrality, there's embrace, there's body appreciation, there's all of these different terms that exist. We had been running an in-school program and an initiative called Love Your Body, and that started in 2017. But what we realized was that was a really strong call to action and a really unrealistic one, and a bit of an ideal, which was something we were trying to make sure people didn't feel they had to conform to. So what we realized is that, you know, loving, liking, accepting your body can be really challenging given the environment that we live in. So our call to action is to encourage people, mostly young people, but people of all ages, to be kind to their own body and also kind to other people's. And that's online, that's face to face, but also the dialogue and the narrative and the commentary that runs in people's own minds. And if you can't be kind, it's being a little bit kinder. We also feel that no matter where someone is in their stage of having a healthy relationship with their body or a positive relationship with their body, they might be going through eating disorder recovery or treatment, that being kind means it's the behaviours we engage in, it's the language that we use, it's the way that we rest, it's the compassion that we apply. So we feel like it's adding lots of things in and hopefully trying to counteract some of those harmful messages that that come from diet culture.
So what are some of the warning signs that someone might be struggling with an eating disorder?
Eating disorders are really complex in how they develop. There's not a single cause. There are a range of biological, psychological, and also sociocultural risk factors. They also present alongside other illnesses and mental health conditions, so depression, anxiety, OCD. We know that substance abuse. We also know that and learning more about the presentation or the experience of people who are neurodivergent. So it's complex. And how one person presents may look very different to another person. But what we do encourage is, one, because it is so complex and there are so many different warning signs to look out for, is to, one, check out the Butterfly website and actually go through some of the detail there, because I think that's really important for everyone of, you know, probably from 15 up. But also, I guess things that people do want to think about is, has there become a preoccupation with weight, shape or size? There may be body shape changes. But sometimes when those things happen, it's a little bit, you know, it's moved further down the line. So maybe someone's talking more negatively about themselves. They might be starting to withdraw from the usual activities that they enjoy. They might be starting to really seek out kind of weight changing or body shape changing exercises, so more exercise. They might be starting to change the way that they're eating. Starting to make excuses around, I guess, foods, or having really quite dramatic shifts and changes to the way that they're eating and exercising, as well as just that kind of general feeling that, oh, something's not quite right here. I feel like this person is struggling. As I said, there's lots of different warning signs that somebody might flag. I think the really important one is just don't assume just because of somebody's body size that they do or they don't have an eating disorder. I think eating disorders can present in people of all different body shapes and sizes across all genders and ethnicities. So we need to make sure that we don't rule out somebody because of their body size. There are a couple of the things that we talk to people about.
It's actually so interesting, some of the things you said, because when I was a teenager, for me, I had really bad acne, and that started my obsession with food, because I was like, okay, I can't have white bread because white bread has so much of these sugary ingredients and that'll drive my acne. So I would not eat a sandwich or like I just got really obsessive and I would start replacing meals with water because I was like, oh, I'll flush my skin out and then my acne will go away. So it wasn't like my weight that started my obsession. It was my skin. So it just goes to show that like anything can kick it off.
That's right. And I think what you kind of have articulated is also there's a fear, right? So there's a fear of what food is going to do to your body. So whether it's through size or skin or whatever it might be. And I think when there's attachment of the fear or using food in a way to cope with emotional stress or challenges or different feelings that we have, that relationship with food has shifted and changed, and that can obviously be really problematic and disorder a person's relationship with food, eating, and also their body. And I think, you know, so many people do actually sit with disordered eating in our society, and that in and of itself is a real challenge. So sometimes people think I have to wait until it's an eating disorder, it's actually not that bad, or it's okay, I think I've got this. But really it's affecting them. It's consuming. They might be thinking about food more often. They might be anything they choose or they do is all driven by how it's going to, obviously, the impact it's going to have on their body or their appearance. And that's exhausting. And that's obviously not a really positive and balanced relationship with our body.
Is there some misconceptions around eating disorders?
There is still like so much stigma surrounding even body image and eating disorders. So things that it's about vanity, that it's a lifestyle choice, that it only affects teenage white girls, that, you know, you have to be underweight to have an eating disorder, that you can't recover as well. That's kind of, you know, you often hear people say, well, once you have an eating disorder, you have it for life. So there's a lot of misconceptions that people attach to eating disorders. So we a lot of the work we do through our awareness campaigns at Butterfly and our advocacy work is to really work to change the narrative around eating disorders, raise awareness about what they are and aren't, and obviously hopefully that can help people to consider that, or maybe what they are experiencing or someone is experiencing might actually be an eating disorder and they need support.
How did you identify that you had an eating disorder, or was it someone approaching you and saying, hey, is everything okay?
So it was a bit of a combination. I had through my sport, I'd had some injuries and I'd had some real big disappointments with selection and things like that. So I'd also had, when I was 16, skin folds done and basically told that I needed to reduce those skin folds. And that was all done in a very balanced way. But unfortunately, it had introduced this kind of, you know, weight to worth win kind of mindset and mentality. So it did kind of develop quite slowly. And I basically thought I knew what I was doing, that I was just trying to lose weight. I was trying to get fitter. I was trying to make selection. I was recovering from my injury. But there was obviously a restriction in there, and there was overtraining as well. So what did happen is that I did get little prompts and little messages from my mum in particular along the way. I would get, you know, little something that she would cut out. Like, this was a long time ago now. So she would put out a little snippet that was in the newspaper. She put it out on the bench. And so just subtle ways of kind of saying, hey, I think there's something going on. But I do remember prior to my 21st that I was very determined to be looking a certain way at my 21st. So, and that happens a lot in life. It might be a wedding, it might be a formal, it might be a party, it might be just Saturday night, whatever it might be. So again, I had a very clear goal and I had a very clear end to when these behaviors were going to stop. And as I said, my mum had been kind of giving me little hints and little pushes along the way, and she had mentioned that she did know someone who would be able to help if I needed it. And I always knew that the day after my 21st, I had a party at home, that I was going to enjoy all the food that we had. I wasn't going to have it on the night, but I was going to have it the next day. And I remember in the morning going to look at all the leftover stuff and all looked delicious. And in my head, I realized, oh my goodness, like I actually can't. Something's happened here. And I had a real moment of fear and going, holy heck, I thought I had this. I thought I knew what I thought this was under control. I thought I was driving this bus, but oh gosh, it's absolutely off the rails and I don't know what's going on and I don't know how to pull it back. So it took me a little bit of time, but because I'd had that gentle nudging from my mum, also some sport coaches had started to identify that my, you know, I was looking a different way, but that was affecting my performance. I didn't have stamina. I wasn't as strong, those things as well. And so I did kind of verbalize to my mum that, yes, I think I've got an issue and that I needed to get some help. And that was a terrifying moment because you don't know what comes next. But I did know that the way that I was living, I couldn't maintain, and that the eating disorder mindset was just making me feel terrible. There was nothing that I did that it would celebrate. There was no matter what weight I was, no matter how I looked, it never said, you look great or well done, or it was just driving harder and harder every time. So it kind of, I think perhaps being a little bit older maybe, I don't know. But, yeah, there was that self-identification that, oh, my goodness, that this is not good.
And then how did your mum and your coaches support you? What was the next step after you did identify it?
We went to a sports dietitian who was really amazing, and I'm forever indebted to their approach because at the time, you know, eating disorders there was again, a lot of misinformation out there, but very punitive treatment approaches, which sadly still happen today. But she had a very holistic and different approach. So I did have to stop playing netball. Unfortunately, my club and team, I was captain of, you know, state league team at national championship high level in Victoria. And I had to step away from all of that. I didn't really get any support, I would say, from my coach and my club. And when I did return, I went to a different club. I don't resent that. Maybe if it sounds like I do, I don't, because I realise at the time, you know, people were unsure about what it was all about. They certainly didn't cause it. They wished me well, but didn't really know what to do to support me. But mum and my family, we understood that the eating disorder was a part of me. It wasn't all of me. We separated myself from my eating disorder. And I just really committed to consistent treatment. So I did try lots of different other things. My goal was to stay out of hospital, which we managed to achieve, which was wonderful because I know that can be really challenging. It can do lots of wonderful things for people, obviously, at critical, keeping people alive. But for me, yeah, I managed to recover with the support of some really incredible individuals, but also with the drive to kind of get there. And I, you know, having a perfectionistic personality and a high achiever and a little bit obsessive, I applied that to recovery and I thought, okay, I'll apply all those traits and try to be the most recovered person I could be, which of course is problematic because that's setting another ideal, but it did put me, it did allow me to keep striving for, you know, to be recovered. But I know the experience is very different for every person, dependent upon their family environment, their financial situation, the age at which they develop an eating disorder, what support they can access. So I in no way, you know, it was an incredibly challenging time. I wouldn't want to do it again. I wouldn't want to put my family through that. I still live with regret about how it affected my family. I was the eldest, I'm the eldest of four. So, yeah, it is really challenging. But I think, you know, I sit in a place now that I am recovered. I'm mum. I've been able to give back and use my experience in a way that I hope helps other people.
And then you've touched on how eating disorders are linked with mental health. But I wanted to ask, what are misconceptions people have about body image and its impact on mental health?
I mean, everyone who lives in a body can talk about body image because it's a body image is the feelings and the thoughts and the attitudes that we have about our physical self. And then the behaviours that we engage in as a result of those feelings and attitudes. And we know that it's influenced by many things. We know that for some people experiencing eating disorders, that body image is not the main driver or how, you know, fear of fatness or whatever it might be. It can be other things, but obviously the body becomes a central part of the eating disorder. And obviously making sure that person is medically safe in recovery. But with with body image, I think people do think that it's about vanity, and they don't realize that when someone's feeling really dissatisfied in their body and uncomfortable in the skin that they have, and if their body is fluctuating or changing, which should happen over the course of a life, that it can really affect the way that a person engages in their life. So it might affect their work. It might affect the way that they might not put themselves up for promotions at work. They might not want to go to school. They might not want to socialize. They might not really like summer, or might affect their sport or their other activities that they participate in, because it's distracting. Because when we're doing things and we're thinking about how our body looks, or what our, instead of obviously focusing on the function, we're not then focused or present in the moment. We're really distracted by our body. It can affect people with their intimate relationships, and of course it can affect people's relationship with eating and physical activity. And that can go either way. It can be under-eating, over-eating, under-exercising, over-exercising, which again has implications on a person's health and well-being.
So interesting you mentioned summer and winter. So I played netball last year. Yeah. And I had to wear one of those dresses. And as I said, I feel like I'm the largest I've ever been. So putting on that dress every Tuesday night, it was a trigger. And I would just kind of hold myself a bit ashamed. I know that's like a little bit hunched over, like don't look at me. Do things to make myself feel hidden, like I'd wear a big jumper, or I'd wear track pants just to like hide the fact that I was in the dress.
Yeah, and I think that's the tragedy of body dissatisfaction, is the idea of playing sport is for you to move your body, have fun, do something that's for you know, your physical health, but also team sports are unreal. So you have the connection with people, and there's the joy that you get from, you know, maybe winning a game, or what, you know, if you're a terrible team, it might just be getting a goal in a game, or, you know, just the whatever it is that you allow, that sport allows you to do. And body image can take that away from you. And we know, particularly for girls, that actually body image is a real barrier to girls continuing sport into their adolescence.
Interesting.
And things like you've just mentioned, so the uniforms and those skirts and dresses. So I coach my daughter's netball team, and I'm president of our local netball club. And one of the things that we've got in our club is that we have girls or boys want to wear whatever they want to wear, they can wear. So there's a shorts and a t-shirt option, or there's a dress option, and in multiple sizes, because we don't want what they have to wear to be the barrier for them to not get on the court. And that needs to be accommodated at every age, so that you can feel comfortable in whatever you're wearing and focus on playing the game rather than feeling self-conscious or worrying that something's, you know, we're wobbling here, or not tight enough there, or not smooth enough here, and just really just take away the joy of that experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Wondering if we could dive in and talk about what other initiatives and projects you're currently involved in promoting body positivity and education around eating disorders.
So the work that we do in our prevention and education team is very much working to prevent body dissatisfaction and also disordered eating, because we know they're really significant risk factors to the development of an eating disorder. So we have our BodyKind initiative, which runs in September and has BodyKind schools and BodyKind families. We also are running the only national youth survey that looks at the experience of body image in young people. So that's our BodyKind youth survey, and we'll be kicking off the third year of that survey. It'll start being advertised in August, which is something we'd love people to get involved with and to share their voice and experience. We also have Butterfly Body Bright, which is actually a global first, which is a whole of primary school program that supports primary school age children to have a positive relationship with their body, eating and physical activity. So it's got lesson plans for teachers, it's got curriculum, it's got staff training, it's got parent resources, and it's also got school culture guidelines as well. So that's a really exciting one as well. Yeah. We do have education services, so we have people who have had lived experience who go in and present really strength-based positive content around body image and looking at the different risk and protective factors that are appropriate at different ages and stages. So that's for secondary schools. We have workshops and trainings also for our BodyKind sports. We support whole sport organizations with coaches and athletes and also parents as well. And then we'll be hopefully launching, well, we will be launching BodyKind online education a bit later in the year. So that's a really exciting and innovative project that's been supported by the eSafety Commissioner and their online safety grants program, which is great. So that provides e-learning program for year 7 and 8 and also year 9 and 10 to really take a deep dive into social media and body image and how they can have hopefully a more safer and positive experience online.
Denny, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today and sharing your personal journey and all the incredible work the Butterfly Foundation is creating. For all our listeners who want to learn a little bit more about this charity, I'll pop links in the show notes below.
Back to this podcast. Please give us a 5-star review and share it with someone who you think would benefit from it. We want to help as many people as possible live healthier lives. This podcast is general in nature. We aren't doctors or health practitioners. But if this podcast has prompted something for you, we really encourage you to make an appointment with your health practitioner and get advice that is tailored to you. This podcast is recorded on the land of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. We pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples.